All right, well, good evening, everybody. It's great to be here today. We're a bit sparse here at the chapel, and the topic I'm going to talk about today, there's one individual I'll probably focus on, but in the topic, it's relevant to everybody. It's going to be a little bit about marriage. When I was thinking about what topic we were going to talk about, Brian, my good friend Brian, said, well, you're going to be attending some weddings, David, this summer, so maybe something on marriage would be appropriate. And so I appreciated that guidance, and that's where I'm going. But the reality is, even if you're married or you're not, you never arrive. I've been married for almost 40 years, and I think there's others even more so. And there's always something to improve. There's always something to be reminded of. There's always something to sharpen. And there's always this issue of maybe taking for granted of certain things, and even there's apathy that sometimes comes in. But what's exciting about going to a new wedding is you've got a newlywed situation where you've got that excitement, that new love, that idealistic, romantic kind of thing where the expression love is blind probably comes from, where you see past some things. And my mother used to say something like, oh, they're just living on bread and water, which means all those other things didn't matter as long as they had each other and it was together. And so, you know, newlyweds sometimes can feel that they can be carried over the bumps, right, of the challenges in the life ahead. As long as we're together, we'll overcome all this stuff. And that's great, and that's good. You know, there's dreaming of what life is going to look like. You know, the house and the white picket fence and the kids running in the yard and the dog in the yard in some instances. But we all know that sometimes problems arise, challenges arise, it's life. There might be conflicts, there might be disagreements, there might be health concerns, there might be in-laws, there might also be finance issues that come up. And that expectations maybe don't kind of form as we otherwise thought they would and aren't realized as different frictions or selfish behavior, things come in. Now that's, you can't talk like this at a wedding. Obviously you can't officiate a wedding and say, hey, I want to warn you about all this stuff. And this isn't a warning. This is more of hopefully an encouragement about how we look at things, because we want to realistically look at what lies ahead, because marriage is no different than the other things in life where we come up with bumps and challenges. And it's how we manage them and how we go forward. The other thing that happens is we all make mistakes, right? Some of us learn quickly to correct them, and otherwise, and some people are just completely blind to what it is and what those issues are. But before you tune out, and I speak to those at Zoom, you're captured, but the Zoom people can hit click. You know, I look at marriage, and some, whether you're married or not, you know, we are a family. We're a church family, and we're the family of God. And it's good to understand the dynamics, because God puts in front of us different ministries whereby we can come alongside with somebody and encourage them. And so to understand marriage, to understand some of the conflicts and some of the challenges, is important, because inevitably and unfortunately, a couple that is hurting or struggling or discouraged might come into your life whereby you can preach into it and you can minister to it. And I'm not saying that you're a counselor, you're behavioral psychologist, anything like that, but the ability to say encouraging words in the right environment and to point in the right direction is something that we should all be aware of, and that knowing the more different aspects of marriage are important in order to do that. So tonight I'm going to open up in Genesis, and we're going to look at Genesis 12 and onwards, and we're going to look at the story of Sarah and Abraham and kind of go through some of those issues. Now, before we do that, let's just open in a word of prayer. Our blessed God and Father, we just want to thank you again for the opportunity to open your word. We thank you, Father, that you provide it to us to learn from it, to encourage us and to warn us and to teach us. Father, thank you so much. Thank you that it's living and powerful. Thank you that we can look into it and learn. Thank you that we have the freedom to do so. And we just lift this little time and this little study to you this evening and ask you to bless it. Guide my words and guide my thoughts, and we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So it's interesting, because when you look at Abraham and Sarah, I started in the New Testament a little bit, and when you look at the New Testament for Abraham and Sarah, it's quite encouraging. It says in Romans 4 and 9, of course, it reads, Abraham was counted righteous by God because of his faith, right? And in Hebrews 11, verse 8, it says, it was by faith that Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and go to another land that God would give him as an inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going, and even when he reached the land of God promised him, he lived there by faith, for he was like a foreigner living in tents. Abraham was looking forward to a city for eternal foundations, a city designed and built by God. And in verse 11, it talks about Sarah in Hebrews 11. It was by faith that even Sarah was able to have a child, though she was barren and was too old. She believed that God would keep his promise. And then, of course, in Isaiah, God calls Abraham a friend. So what I want to spend a few moments tonight on is to look at marriage, the marriage of actually Sarah and Abraham, and how their challenges and mistakes might speak to you and me and might change us and for the glory of God in our marriages. And I'm far from a perfect husband, and Donna's not here, so she won't, you can't see her nodding. But the good news is it's not too late that we change things. Much like sanctification in our relationships, we should be looking to change for the other and for the glory of God. But I'm thankful to see that in the life of Abraham and Sarah, that God is willing to faithfully pour his grace and his mercy out to them on forgiveness and to move their marriage forward. I guess the thought was that God constantly works through imperfect people to accomplish his perfect will. And I'm thankful that he works that through me. And we'll see that clearly in the life of Abraham and Sarah. So tonight I want to talk about, or if you walk away, you say, well, what are David's 3 points? Well, I want to talk about how do we protect our marriage? How do we prioritize our marriage? And how do we maintain purity in our marriage? Because these all impacted the life of Abraham and Sarah. So to start, Abraham and Sarah, there's always challenges in marriage. And Abraham started with some major stresses and challenges in their marriage. And it wasn't like a storybook marriage. If you just read the New Testament, you might miss the nuances of what entailed their marriage, of those two people recognized, for example, in Hebrews. So in Genesis chapter 11, we kind of pick up the story, and I'll pick up the story throughout Genesis, but in Genesis chapter 11, in verse 29, we read, meanwhile, Abraham and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. Milcah and her sister Iscar were daughters of Nahor's brother Haran. But Sarai was unable to become pregnant and had no children. One day, Terah took his son Abram, his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and his grandson Lot, his son Haran's child, and moved away from Ur of the Chaldeans. He was headed from the land of Canaan, but they stopped at Haran and settled there. Terah lived for 205 years and died while still in Haran. And then starting in chapter 12, and verse 1, the Lord had said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families of the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram departed as the Lord had instructed, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. So can you identify the stress in the marriage? Well, Abram and Sarai, as she was called then, had some challenges that would have significant impact on their marriage from very early on. The first has to do with children, and the second with a geographical move. So let's talk about children. Right off the bat, we're introduced to Sarai as Abraham's wife, and in the next verse, it says she was unable to become pregnant and had no children. I don't think I've ever met a newlywed, and I know as I was married and I had a vision, I always expected to have children. And that was near the top of my list, and that was in part of our future together. In one sense, God programs us to want and to have and to nourish children. There are several times that God uses infertility to show his power, miracle, and ultimately, from that, a prominent person is born. You see, for example, Sarah and Isaac, Hannah and Samuel, and Elizabeth and John the Baptist. Now, I speak about this topic very cautiously, and I speak about this because the Lord has worked in my heart on this issue. But I don't know if you know today, but about one of seven couples experience infertility. It's not a new topic, and it's a topic that exists throughout time. And in the range of 10 to 20% of pregnancies end in a miscarriage. It's significant. And so Sarah and Abram are in this. So why am I bringing this up? Well, I've recently had an opportunity to walk beside a young couple from another church who are experiencing, they're struggling, and they're coping with infertility. So my heart goes out to Sarah. In the past, I may have not stopped here at this point, but rather just stated the fact that Sarah couldn't have children and then continued. But more so as I pray for this young couple and many others like them, and as this couple lets me into some of the day-to-day feelings and the excitement, the disappointments, the fatigue, the grief, and the sorrow, I'm humbled at the hidden pain that they carry. God has awakened me to the grief of a young mother and an expectant father that through miscarriage or others will never hold that baby. The many hopes and dreams and desires are crushed, right? But I have a better appreciation today too on lost adoptions, where an expectant mother and father eagerly await the papers for that child by which to pour love and care on it, only discover that it will not happen. They grieve that loss. Now, I'm not going to go on much further, but there is a tremendous book that I had that I was able to read that helped me better understand and provide me with a deeper insight on what couples go through with infertility and miscarriages and adoption loss. It's written by Jennifer Sackey, called Hannah's Hope. And of course, Hannah, we all know why that title would exist. Hannah, of course, again, was in the same situation. But I encourage you, one of the chapters that spoke to my heart is one that says, when churches add to the heartache. So it struck me, when churches add to the heartache, and which identifies how churches and our church family can add to the grief that's already being suffered. So anyways, I will leave it there. But if someone's interested in the book and would like to see the title, would like to talk to me about it later, I'm happy to do that. I think of the verse in Proverbs 13 and 12 that says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. And I think of the young families and the young couples that do that. And I don't leave Sarah isolated from Abram in this. There's obviously both. And I have no reason to believe that Sarai didn't carry that pain, although God felt that it wasn't something to be added to the scriptures. The second stress that the couple would face was moving. Like, I've moved many times, you might have moved many times, but this move back in this day is much different. Genesis 11, verse 31, again, just to repeat, one day Terah took his son Abram and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife, and his grandson Lot, and moved away. Now, the move was about, I think if you look at the map, I think it's about 800, 900 kilometers, so it's by foot, right? And then in another verse, the Lord said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. If you'd asked newlywed Sarai what she was hoping for in marriage, I'm pretty sure her answer wasn't going to be to move and to live in tents with no destination or no timetable. There was no house hunting trip, no United van lines pulling up, and no airplane trip, no hotels and no restaurants. So with the challenges of both not having children and the travel, we can now look a little bit into, specifically into Abram and Sarai's life. So if we pick up in Genesis 12, and again, recognizing time, I'll read it and see if I can get through it all. But in Genesis chapter 12, starting at verse 10, at that time, a severe famine struck the land of Canaan, forcing Abram to go down to Egypt, where he lived as a foreigner. As he was approaching the border of Egypt, Abram said to his wife, Sarai, look, you are a very beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Let's kill him. Then we can have her. So please tell them you are my sister. Then they will spare my life and treat me well because of their interest in you. And sure enough, when Abram arrived in Egypt, everyone noticed Sarai's beauty. When the palace officials saw her, they sang her praises to Pharaoh, the king, and Sarai was taken into the palace. Then Pharaoh gave Abram many gifts, and because of her, sheep, goats, cattle, male and female donkeys, male and female servants, and camels. But the Lord sent terrible plagues upon Pharaoh and his household because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh summoned Abram and accused him sharply. What have you done to me? He demanded. Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister and allow me to take her as my wife? Now then, here's your wife. Take her out of here. Pharaoh ordered some of his men to escort them, and he sent Abram out of the country along with his wife and all the possessions. So needless to say, one of the topics tonight is protecting your marriage, protecting my marriage. I trust none of us will be in a position of fear where we would fear that separating with our wife, and in this case, providing her to another man, is necessary. You know, I came up with this word equivocating, which is to use ambiguous language so as to conceal the truth and avoid committing oneself. That was a term that I think Matthew Henry used to describe Abram's words. But irrespective of the word chosen, of whether it was right or wrong, or he was truthful in a sense, if you read on, it was Sarai was his half-sister. But in any case, his right answer, I think, should have been that Sarai is my wife, she's mine. But more so, you know, I think of what a frightening experience for Sarai, to be removed, given up by her husband, to be separated, removed from his love, his leadership, his protection, and to be effectively abandoned. I mean, that's, as I look at that, did Abram love Sarah? I have no doubt that he did. On her death in Genesis 23, verse 1, we read, Abram mourned and wept for her when she died. Did Sarah love Abram? I believe she did. Was Abram making this fear up? Because I kind of looked at this, and there's a lot you can read on the nature of a foreigner in a land, and there's a lot of history about foreigners being dealt with very roughly as they came in. And so there was a reality to the fear that Abram had regarding the treatment of a foreigner. You know, and in fact, God identifies the mistreatment of foreigners in Leviticus, and I think in Deuteronomy, when he specifically instructs the Israelites, in for example, Leviticus 19:34, the foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were a foreigner in Egypt, and I am the Lord your God. But despite the fear that Abram felt, what was God's intention in marriage, and what's God's intention in our marriage? Well, it starts in Genesis 2, for example, where we read, and the man said, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for out of man she was taken. Verse 24 says, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united with his wife, and they will become one flesh. We also see in Ecclesiastes 4 and 12, where King Solomon says, a person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not quickly broken. Of course, I've been to weddings where they braid that triple braided cord as part of their vow and a part of their commitment to each other. with the recognition that that third core is a woven, is woven to represent the Lord in their life and in their marriage. So marriage makes husband and one flesh, husband and wife one flesh, and I can't imagine how each of them felt when Sarai was led away from Pharaoh's team. And Abram appears to have done nothing to protect his wife. But needless to say, of all those details, it made me think, how do I protect my marriage from the things that would seek to separate me and my wife? Because they're there. In Abram's case, it's well defined. It was Pharaoh, and it was Abram's fear. But what do I allow in my life to separate me and my wife physically, emotionally, or spiritually? And what things can I do to protect my marriage? So each marriage is unique. There are many things that come up in a marriage where there are nuances of what we do and how we do it that might otherwise seem to be items of separation for us. So I'm going to focus on the things that we can do to protect our marriage and just name a couple of them. One is the dedication that we do together to our devotions and prayers. A spiritual life, when we think of that triple braided cord, our personal time that we spend with our wife in devotion and prayers is key. It's something that we cannot compromise and that we cannot ignore. I think the second thing is integrity. You know, whether it's a wife or a male, we see that we shouldn't lie, we shouldn't deceive, we shouldn't hide things. We should be quick to say we're sorry. And with integrity, we solve a lot of the issues. I love the Proverbs verse 24, where it says, an honest answer given is like a kiss on the lips. Proverbs 24, 26. Time is one thing that we all lack. There's no doubt that we can't make it, and it consumes and it flies by very quickly. But it's important in our marriages to dedicate that time to protect our marriage through a number of different things, and you can name it, whether it be date nights, whether it be walks, whether it be joining in service. But we have to protect that time that we spend together. And then finally, communication. And I don't mean talking lightly, but I mean meaningful communication where we actually sit down, we actually focus on each other, we actually listen and talk things uninterrupted in reality. It's difficult when we have kids, it's difficult in a number of different circumstances with the busyness of life. But that intentional communication and that meaningful discussion can add so much. It avoids assumptions, it avoids bitterness, misunderstandings, and disappointments. So in that same example where we look at Abram's, I guess I'll call it failure to protect his wife and his marriage, I also look at prioritizing. So not only do we look at protection, but we look at prioritizing. I think they're two distinct things. Because if we don't prioritize our spouse or our marriage, it will come second or third, and it will allow us to drift apart, right? Put it in a place of things that we prioritize, it strengthens the bond of our marriage. You know, I was thinking of the common vows that that couples would otherwise recite at a wedding, where it says, they just recite, well, I take you hereby to be my wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, for sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do us part, according to God's holy law. In comparison to that vow, then we read Abram's statement in Genesis 12 and 13. He says to Sarai, he says, so please tell them you're my sister, then they will spare my life and treat me well because of their interest in you. It doesn't sound like it's to love and to cherish, does it? Now, when we go to the New Testament, we get a better perspective on what love and cherish and what's the expectation because of Jesus, what our expectation is. In 1 Peter 3, verse 5 and 7, it says, For this is how the holy women of the past adorned themselves. They put their hope in God and were submissive to their husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham and called him Lord. And you are her children if you do what is right and refuse to give way to fear. This is the verse I was after. It was interesting to hear, to see Abram and Sarah being referred. But it says, husbands, in the same way, treat your wives with consideration as a delicate vessel and with honor as fellow heirs of the gracious gift of life, so that your prayers are not hindered. And in Ephesians 5, we continue with that same encouragement. Husbands, Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Indeed, no one ever hated his own body, but he nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. Just like I can do better, I think Abram could have done much better. But as I note, I find it interesting to see that if we continue, and I'm not going to look at it today, but if we continue to look, we see how brave Abram was when he was the aggressor and when he came to rescue his nephew Lot. He fought for Lot, who was captured and all his wealth was taken. And yet, Abram didn't fight for Sarai. He surrendered her. So what are the practical things that we can do or that I can do that helps prioritize my spouse and my marriage? Well, I can act with integrity again. If I say I will do something, if I say I will be there, I'll be there, I'll do it. I don't want to make my wife or my spouse the cancelable or movable item in my calendar. That doesn't make them feel very important or feel like a priority. The other thing is actions lead our hearts and send a message. What I mean by that is sometimes we don't know where to start. Sometimes we don't feel it. Sometimes, you know, it's hard. I believe it was this Sunday, and I forget who it was, which is good. I won't embarrass anybody. But I saw this gentleman open the door for his wife as she got in the car, and then he closed it, and then he went around. You might say, David, that's not a big deal. But it struck me that, one, I don't do that for my wife. And two, that it expressed to me the love that this gentleman had for her and the care he had for her and that the priority he had for her. So anyways, I just noted that sometimes our actions lead our hearts, that as we do things out of love and care for someone, our hearts go there. The other thing I can show to prioritize is reduce time I spend elsewhere. If I'm not together, and if we're not together, are we poorly protected? And if I'm not prioritizing that, it really goes to what my attention, my time, my passions and interests are diverted to outside of her, and to make sure they're worth it. And what takes me away from my spouse and my marriage, and to make sure that they're correct. And then develop one of the ways that we can show our spouse that they are a priority, especially in an instance where we're struggling, and it's no embarrassment to have times where we struggle, and sometimes we're in a rut and need help. Well, we can show our spouses and the importance of our marriage by getting help. Sometimes we can't pull ourselves out. Sometimes we need that support of others. And if you want to show how important your marriage and your spouse is, and placed above money, placed above time, and placed above your own sense of pride and becoming vulnerable, the opportunity to reach out for help is extremely important, and we need that. Now let's go on the last component, which is purity. And in Genesis 15, we read, "But Abram replied, 'O sovereign Lord, what good are all your blessings when I don't have a son?'" Since Genesis 15, verse 2, "Since you've given me no children, Eleazar of Damascus, a servant in my household, will inherit all my wealth. You have given me no descendants of my own, so one of my servants will be my heir." Verse 4, "Then the Lord said to him, 'No, your servants will not be your heir, for you will have a son of your own who will be your heir.' Then the Lord took Abram outside and said, 'Look up at the stars, look up at the sky and count the stars, if you can. That's how many descendants you will have.' And Abram believed the Lord, and the Lord counted him as righteous because of his faith." Then in chapter 16, it starts, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children with him, But she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abraham, "The Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her." And Abraham agreed with Sarai's proposal. So Sarai, Abraham's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as a wife. I think of the verse in Proverbs chapter 4. In Proverbs chapter 4, and it starts with verse 23, it says, "Guard your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the springs of life. Put away deception from your mouth. Keep your lips from perverse speech. Let your eyes look forward. Fix your gaze straight ahead. Make a level path for your feet, and all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your feet away from evil." And then I think of Hebrews 13, verse 4, "Marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous." Now, again, Sarah chose to try to fix this, fix the fact that she didn't have a child on her own, but we can see that Hagar didn't solve any problems, if you're familiar with the story. It didn't fill the hole in her heart and her desire to have children. Compromise, shortcuts, and sin only made things worse. The introduction of Hagar only complicated things. It made me think, too, as after we think of protection and priority, that I need to be careful of what I introduce and bring into my marriage that doesn't belong there. In most cases, it may not take a physical form like a Hagar, but more frequently it attacks my attitude or my perspective and fantasies that I cannot be met. So for example, you know, a lot of discussions on pornography that displays bodies, actions, and relationships. You know, what's the danger? Well, it changes your attitudes, it changes your feelings, it creates unrealistic expectations and selfish fulfillments that you bring into your marriage. This is brought in, it is so easy and discreetly available that we can cheat on a spouse with a click of a button. You know, so it's the purity. How do we retain purity in our marriage? We can lose ourselves even in simple things like Hallmark relationships with the Hallmark movies, the dreams of better lives, better circumstances, romance, excitement, a departure from what our reality is. And we can feel that we feel is lacking, for example, in our own relationship. We can stream programs. Today, it's incredible what we can stream on the different streaming sites that are explicit in language, storylines, and scenes, and not think twice of how it might impact our own expectations and attitudes that we bring into our marriages. How do we maintain purity? We can bring things into our marriages that distract and deceive and make us discontented. This can lead, like Sarah, to cases of compromise that don't solve anything but make things worse. And I think of those verses, "Let your eyes look forward, fix your gaze straight ahead, make a level path for your feet, and in all your ways be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your feet away from evil." So my time is up, but I trust these few thoughts on protecting our marriages, prioritizing our marriages and our spouses, and maintaining purity in our marriages is something that we can all work on and that we all continue to do. God was faithful to Sarah and Abram, and they remained faithfully trusting God despite their mistakes and their challenges. God is faithful that promised, and as we seek to honor him and glorify him through our marriages, he will bless us for us, and I thank him for his grace and his mercy.